Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation on this Monday, July 6th. Super Typhoon Bobby is still sweeping through the Western Pacific. The superstorm made a direct hit over the island of Rota with gusts exceeding 150 miles per hour. In the Commonwealth of the Marianas, power has still not been fully restored after another super typhoon hit back in April. We'll get an update. We hear from Common Cause as it ponders the rulings of the U.S. Supreme Court, from birthright citizenship to campaign spending. We hear more about our Hawaiian monk seals as this is pupping season amidst growing concern over human interaction. And just coming off the holiday barbecues, we ask shoppers, what's not in your cart as we watch prices soar? This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. We turn our attention to the Western Pacific, where a second super typhoon is sweeping through Guam and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas. Super Typhoon Bobby made a landfall Monday morning with 175 mile per hour winds. It is passing just north of Guam, and officials are just waking up to assess the damage to its facilities. HBR's Cassie Ordonio joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Yeah, lots of, it's nerve-wracking because we both have friends and family who live on the island out there, and yeah, it's crazy.
Exactly, and this is going to be another storm that they're experiencing after Typhoon Sinlaku, not even 3 months later, actually. And when I was looking at the National Weather Service report, Rota got hit pretty bad. I remember seeing social media videos and the Rota mayor's office. You could see in the video that the tin roof was just flapping up and down. Looks like it was about to go flying off. And the winds were terrifying over there. You could see that the palm trees were like, looks like it was already going to be blown away. And then you see Guam, Saipan, and Tinian, they're also experiencing high winds. And when I checked this morning on the National Weather Service report, the typhoon is dying down a bit, but they're still under typhoon watch. There's still hurricane strong winds that they're worried about, like debris blowing in, and there's been some structural damage to like tin roofs and whatnot, but no deaths reported so far.
Well, it was interesting because last week, you know, those National Weather Service alerts were saying it looks dire, it looks grim, and when that's the language from the National Weather Service, you know it's going to be a bad situation. But yeah, they're resilient, and you know, like I said, they've just gone through the super typhoons in Laku. That was just the end of April, so it's rough.
What was different about Typhoon Bobby? I've been seeing that Typhoon Sinlaku is dubbed the strongest storm so far to hit the region this year. But I've also been seeing media reports that Typhoon Bobby is the biggest storm, not so much the strongest, but the biggest storm, stretching about little more than 1,000 miles. And I saw a media report saying like that's as far as like from New York to Miami, Florida.
Wow.
So that's a pretty, you know, big circular storm that's hitting the Mariana Islands. And apparently it's there's kind of like a there's a report saying that it's supposed to be heading to Okinawa and Taiwan as well. So it's not just going to stop at the Mariana Islands. But residents, they're still recovering from Typhoon Sinlaku. I've been trying to reach out to my sources from Saipan about Typhoon Bobby, but they're still in shelter right now. And I've been hearing about some power outages, and I haven't seen them active on social media in a couple of days. But one of my sources, Poima Mofnes Tarkong, she's still recovering from the storm, but 2 weeks ago she had to clean up her house after it flooded with about an inch or two of water from a tropical storm a couple weeks ago. And so far she said the recovery efforts has been going pretty well, but there are organizations helping people by providing food, water, clothing, and other necessities to folks who still need it. But during Sinlaku, she said her roof was damaged, and you know, this is what she said a few weeks after Typhoon Sinlaku hit her home.
That was when most of the damages incurred to my house. Most of the flooding took place in my house. And it just, it didn't take me that long, honestly, to recognize that this was just as bad as Yutu and Sudalore. Like, this was really real deal super typhoon. Because we've had typhoons since then, but there's a huge difference between a typhoon and a super typhoon, seriously. And yeah, so when that realization hit, we were like, oh, we should have done a little bit more. We did do our typhoon prep, but yeah, we could have done a little bit more to secure our stuff, to secure more water security. We only had enough food and water for like 3 or 4 days, but you're really supposed to have a week's worth of food and water at home in case you get stuck at home or whatever happens.
What Typhoon Sinlaku has basically unveiled is that there are disparities of people who can afford typhoon-proof homes and those who can't. Building materials are very expensive because a lot of things are imported, and also the fact that the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands and Guam has very low minimum wage. In the CNMI, it's $7.25, and in Guam, it's $9.25. And so Moftis Tarkong said, you know, the average cost to build a fully concrete home for just a small one-bedroom house would be upwards of $150,000. And when I talked to another source who's who was a Saipan resident but lives in Hawaii now, his name is Raymond. His Hanai sister, when she had to fully renovate her home, and she's a teacher working in the DOE over there making only $60,000 a year, she had to pay up to $400,000 to fully renovate her home to make it typhoon proof. And that's also like having the shutters on her doors and windows. That was something that happened to my Saipan source, Poema Malaya Mafnas Tarkong, because even though her house is concrete, that didn't stop Typhoon Sinlaku from flooding her house through the windows that didn't have shutters. And so her house was so flooded that it had up to 3 feet that her and her husband, they had to shovel water into the toilet to flush it out and salvage any of their goods. But when I spoke to Tim Waite, he is a senior territory manager of Simpson Strong Tide Company, which is a company that makes a lot of material to help with hurricane and typhoon resistant homes. This is what he said on what makes a typhoon home resistant.
So one of the biggest factors affecting typhoon damage is not necessarily the choice of the building material itself, but how well the structure is designed, you know, connected and constructed as a complete system. You could build a hollow block or a concrete masonry home with a light frame wood or cold form steel, you know, type roof system, as many people do down in the islands there. But if they don't connect, if they don't secure the roof tightly to the block home or the concrete walls, then they could easily blow off in a storm. They, you know, rely heavily on having uplift connectors and a continuous load path all the way down to the foundation. Even the block walls need to have a bond beam constructed in them with rebar tying it down to the foundation. And we've seen that over and over again. The roof will blow off, and then they'll just put another one on, and then the roof will blow off without having the proper detailing to secure it better for the next typhoon.
So given that we both have family in, you know, in Guam specifically, but you also see like how these homes are built. Either they're made of full concrete or they're partial concrete, meaning maybe the foundation and the walls are made of concrete, but they have tin roofs. But then other homes, they might have like either just full tin or tin and wood. Those that tin and wood may not sustain a powerful super typhoon. But when I talked to Tim Waite, he said one of the most common structural failures during powerful storms like Typhoon Sinlaku or Typhoon Bavi are roof failures. If they're not secure, they're going to blow away and no shelter. He did mention that affordability is an issue just because you have to ship those building materials over to the Mariana Islands. One thing that he said is super important is that there are concrete homes, but the windows aren't secure, and that can cause issues to people experiencing typhoon winds up to 150 miles per hour.
There are different ways to protect the window openings from windborne debris. You could get as expensive as putting in impact-resistant glass. That's very expensive. Or it could be as simple as just securing plywood or some kind of fabric or other materials over the window. So there's a whole sliding scale of different types of shutters to put over the windows, but it's very important, especially with an area is being hit with super typhoons or even, you know, wind speeds over, you know, where you get flying debris, to protect the windows, because you can, you know, like the one you interviewed that had all that damage, you can see where, you know, maybe your roof might stay on, but if you compromise the envelope of the building, of the house, when the windows break or the doors blow in, or even if somebody can afford a garage door, that's another vulnerable spot. You're doubling the effect of the wind pressure on the structure, and plus you're getting all that water damage inside. So not only, you know, the continuous load path is important, but being able to protect, you know, from windborne debris, all the windows and openings in the house is very important.
There's light at the end of the tunnel. He said after seeing these back-to-back storms, he said we could see more efforts to build stronger homes for future typhoons.
Whether that financing comes from people just getting tired, the sad part is people will move away. The other part is, you know, is the government going to help them to build a better home? I know that while I was in Guam, FEMA was shipping tons of material to help with the rebuilding effort. The hope is that it's rebuilt correctly so that people can survive the next storm. And I think you'll see more of an effort in Saipan based on the frequency of the storms to build more like Guam, because they have to. I mean, you can't keep paying $150,000, $400,000 every time a storm hits two, three times a year.
The next National Weather Service update is going to be at 1 p.m. Hawaii time.
Okay. All right. Well, we will keep tracking that. But thanks so much, Cassie.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to HWR's Cassie Ordonio. You can follow her coverage online at hawaiipublicradio.org and check the National Weather Service for up-to-date information and alerts. Head to weather.gov.
Support for HPR comes from Ho'olanapua, serving youth impacted by trafficking through prevention, intervention, residential treatment, and recovery programs. Volunteer opportunities at ho'olanapua.org.
Hey, it's Michael Barbaro, host of The Daily. The extraordinary reach of New York Times journalism brings you the sound and the story. Times reporters unpack more of what you want to know about our nation and our world as it happens. Catch The Daily Monday through Thursday evenings at 6:30 here on HPR One.
It has been quite a month, and we're only in the first week of July. Besides our nation's birthday, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a number of rulings on some key issues. This morning, we have Cameron Hurt with Common Cause Hawaii in studio live with us. And now that the dust has settled, how is Common Cause looking at what has come down, Cameron?
Oh, man, I think the best way to sum it up briefly is that Common Cause is putting on our armor and we're ready to go to war for the people. We've seen a multitude of Supreme Court decisions that have really been questionable to us. And the ones last week, especially affecting campaign finance, really put the people and their interests at a disadvantage, and it puts it behind the interest of million and billionaire donors.
Yes, and you know, we heard a lot about the birthright citizenship, and then the Hawaii gun law, but we hadn't heard a lot about the campaign spending laws, and that really is worrisome because we're in election season right now.
Correct. And I think just so the listeners know, basically what the Supreme Court decision did was it allowed for political parties to coordinate financially directly with candidates of their choosing. That means now the party gets to solely influence financially whom they want to support. the parties are influencing the voters instead of the voters influencing the parties. And that has to be called out. It has to be stopped.
Yeah. And, you know, this comes just after the ruling on redistricting.
Correct.
And that was pretty jarring.
Jarring. I would almost say even haunting, personally. Personally, it's haunting as a black man from the South. My brother's district was carved up literally a week later after that decision was made.
Wow.
So these are things that are actually lived in, you know, places where I've grown up, where I've seen the political climate for most of my life now is going to look completely different. My old college town in Tuskegee, Alabama, completely carved up, completely looks different. But again, Common Cause is trying to stand in that void. You know, we've launched lawsuits against an unprecedented number of tactics taken by the federal administration. We've been very victorious in some. I think probably most recently was the slush fund lawsuit that we were able to come out on top against, stopping the Trump administration from making that slush fund for his January 6th supporters. So we are fighting.
Yeah, you know, but I think that personal connection that you bring to the table, you know, we were just chatting when you stopped by the studio this morning about the anniversary of the March in Selma.
Yeah.
You know, and we have this exhibit going on at the State Archives, you know, showing the Carnation Lay, you know, with the marchers. And you did something similar. You brought
right.
Flower Lay.
Yeah. For our actually the whole organization, our national organization, Common Cause, we flew into Selma for the anniversary of the march, which was extremely powerful. It was almost a pilgrimage, if you will. One of the things for me as a black man living in Hawaii, it's always been amazing the connection, the roots that are there between the black American community and the Hawaii community. So for me, it was an amazing honor and blessing to be able to take some leis from the place that I call home now and to be able to display them on the anniversary for my people back where I grew up, where I was raised, where my family had sharecropped that land before. So to be able to have that kind of connection there was absolutely amazing. And to have these pictures now, never before seen pictures on display from the State Archives at the Lieutenant Governor's office currently, it's amazing. I'm smiling right now because it's so awesome. It's like a Christmas gift for me.
Yeah, because there's a sense of pride about
yes.
the battles that were fought and just
the
belief.
Solidarity in
yes.
it, right? Like it's we were, you know, as a Southern black male, you think nobody in the Pacific's thinking about you or your struggle. Nobody cares. Then, you know, you move here, you spend, you know, decades plus here, and you learn what a lay means. You learn the labor that goes into making a lay. You learn the thought, the mana. And we were thought about. And we were sent from our Kanaka'iwi allies that severe token of strength. And it's never lost on us. It will never be lost on us. I have a lot of friends that I'm like, hey, how come you guys haven't come to visit me? And they're like, oh, because they said us don't come to the island, so we're going to listen to them. So that solidarity has been born even before Selma. You had runaway slaves who escaped mm-hmm. here. You had black freedmen who were able to come here and work in the shadows of the ali'i and be trusted and be valued as humans. That is something that I take great pride in. It's one of the reasons why I'm so grateful, blessed, and humbled to call Hawaii my home.
Yes, and then now that you are active with Common Cause, I mean, just
yes.
that personal connection and, you know, I mean, my gosh, it I'm sure it just means so much more. And yet when you see these rulings handed down from the Supreme Court kind of eroding
yes.
some of these freedoms and rights.
It's also trying to make that connection, right? Hawaii has been a official state for, you know, less than 100 years. I come from a place where some of the laws, some of the customs, some of the traditions that are trying to be instilled here have already been instilled where I'm from. So trying to warn what can come, what will happen. You know, one of the biggest things that I think Hawaii would be smart to do with redistricting, even though we don't have a problem right now, is to pass a concrete redistricting state law. I think something else would be smart to do, as we've seen the Voting Rights Act get gutted. The state should pass a Hawaii Voter Rights Act. We just saw this done in Maine, and we see other states wanting to come out and do the same thing. Hawaii can be progressive and proactive before these things get to our shores, in a similar way that we were with passing the marriage equality amendment mm-hmm. to our state constitution. So this is another way that we could do that.
Yeah, and the transgender issues as well.
Correct. Making sure that we are standing in solidarity and making sure that our trans brothers and sisters are getting the medical care that they need. Full stop. Nothing else to be talked about. Everybody should have access to the medical care that they need. And we've seen, you know, again, also last week in the Supreme Court ruling, we saw an attack on transgender people with mm-hmm. their very nonsensical ban on sports. Now, that's not advocating for one way or another. We're saying that why is the highest land in the office involved in something that has affected 8 people to date? It doesn't make sense. And then bringing it back, though, again, to the Supreme Court ruling specifically around campaign financing, this court seems to have adopted a philosophy that money is speech. And they will ride that wherever they will. However, it's important for people to understand the history of the court. What the court has ruled is okay before, such as African Americans being 3/5 of a person, other courts have come back and found that to be actually unconstitutional or not right. So more than anything, I don't want people to get bogged down in the time that we are and feel like there's no hope. There's a lot of hope. There's so much hope. There's so many battles being fought, and we're winning a lot. We're winning a lot. We do see the losses and they hurt, but there are more wins than there are losses. And I think people are always kind of shocked to hear me say that.
Well, I think, you know, when the Supreme Court does say, no, overreach, you've gone too far, and pull, you know, the president back in and say, well, what do we stand for?
Right.
You know, and just evaluate that. So, yes, it's been a mixed bag, but some people might just feel depressed and hopeless.
And you can feel that way. And I think if you read a few of the judges' opinions, you would always feel that way. I think that, you know, one of the things about the birthright citizenship ruling, which while we're happy that the law of the land stands, we're not really excited about some of the opinions that came out of that. And it's very interesting to see somebody like Justice Thomas, for example, who has always advocated for race-neutral policies, completely throw that out the window to absorb race policies as the reason for the birthright citizenship amendment, even though it was a Chinese man who ultimately brought us that ruling mm-hmm. from the Supreme Court. But you saw somebody like Justice Roberts, who can be a mixed bag in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He's an anomaly to me. But he walked us through the history methodically in his opinion, and he really left no doubt by what was meant for birthright citizenship and why he had to uphold it. And again, you just find these juxtapositions very interesting. Again, somebody like Roberts, who can be a mixed bag. Somebody like Clarence Thomas, who argues against DEI, but was very much a DEI appointment. You see these things and it can make you confused. It can make you feel hopeless. But there's still really good work going. I think, again, I would read Justice Sotomayor. She is hitting it and she's reading her dissents publicly. And I think Justice Jackson is doing a brilliant job as well of just really calling out hypocrisy where it is. We've got a lot of hope.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's just important. Like I said, we were all in a tizzy last week as these rulings came down, just one after one. And you're like, okay, what does this mean?
What's happening? Yes.
Right?
It was whiplash. Like, one was good, one was bad, one was good, one was bad. And finally, I'm just like, I'm just going to take whatever it is at the end of the week. Let it all come and stay in it, though.
Yeah, you have to exhale.
Yes.
And then regroup and then say, okay, well, what does this mean? Where we live here in Hawaii, and what's the strategy, and how do we move forward?
That's it. And when it's a hard day, go hug your neighbors, because that's real America, not what we see on social media.
All right.
Next door.
Thank you so much for being here today and sharing your perspective and your personal viewpoint and why you feel so strongly about the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this.
All right. We have been hearing from Cameron Hurt from Common Cause Hawaii, reacting to decisions handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court this term. Thank you.
Support for HPR comes from KTA Superstores, committed to supporting Hawaii food producers and makers. Learn more about its locally sourced Mountain Apple brand products at ktasuperstores.com.
Aloha, this is Derek Malama. Please join me for the next episode of Kanikapila Vintage, the new podcast from HPR featuring classic editions of Kanikapila Sunday. This week is Keola Beamer and Raiatea Helm. You'll hear how they met and their version of John Lennon's Imagine in Hawaiian. It's available this Thursday wherever you get your podcast. Sponsored by Manuhealii.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to Ulupono Initiative.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz.
Unihoa, ulehua, unihau, ukaua, oahu, umolokai, ulanai, umau, ukaholabe, uhawai.
Coming off the July 4th holiday and the 250th birthday of America, we wondered about early celebrations of American independence here on the islands. The 4th would not become a national holiday in Hawaii until 1895, but celebrations have been taking place annually. We even have a written record of the very first July 4th celebration in Hawaii, thanks to the Pacific Commercial Advertiser, which would later become the Honolulu Advertiser. Brothers Jonathan and Nathan Winship commanded American merchant ships that were moored in the harbor of Honolulu. With the permission of King Kamehameha I, they celebrated America's birthday by firing national salutes at three times throughout the day. Nowadays, we're more likely to see fireworks displays and the firing of live ammunition, but both come with their dangers. According to the Advertiser, one of the sailors on board the vessel injured his hand during the first July 4th celebration, and similar accidents occurred during the next four celebrations of the holiday, too. For our quiz, can you tell us what year the first commemoration of July 4th occurred in Hawaii? Call 808-941-3689 or toll-free 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right gets an HPR reusable tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing affordable housing for families of agricultural workers and retirees, such as the Kunia Village Development Corporation. NereidHawaii.com.
Roughly 1 in 8 Americans say they're taking a GLP-1 drug, such as Ozempic or Wegovy, but not just for weight loss.
This is absolutely the closest thing to a miracle drug there has been. And the list of expanding usages just keeps getting bigger.
From heart disease to sleep apnea, addiction management to Alzheimer's, the science behind GLP-1s. That's on the next On Point.
Beginning this afternoon at 2.
Support for HPR comes from Blue Note Hawaii, presenting psychedelic funk band Pigeons Playing Ping Pong this Friday and Saturday in two shows nightly. Tickets and packages at BlueNoteHawaii.com.
This morning, we consider the plight of the endangered Hawaiian monk seals. This weekend, Star Advertiser reporter Nina Wu had a story about the calls to do more to protect a new baby seal, a pup born on the west side of Oahu.
So Rocky, the famous Hawaiian monk seal, she gave birth to her 16th pup on June 13. The surprising thing is that she did it at Nimitz Beach. So she's never done that before. Don't think any monk seal maybe has given birth at Nimitz Beach before. So that was surprising. And so far, it's been challenging, according to volunteers there. You know, they're seeing a lot of bad behavior. People are getting too close to the monk seal and pup. You're supposed to stay a recommended distance of at least 150 feet. And then there are a lot of after-hour parties, and that's when people drink and they litter. There's also a lot of off-leash dogs. So they were really, really concerned, and they are trying to call, you know, the authorities, federal, state, and they're feeling like they're not getting a lot of response. There's confusion over whose jurisdiction it is.
Yeah, like who you're going to call, right? I mean, I know it's a little bit different over at Kaimana Beach, you know, where there's a lifeguard and they're kind of already used to the routine of, okay, DLNR is going to close off access. You can't just hang on the beach. You know, they limit access to just swimmers and paddlers and fishermen, that kind of thing. But yeah, I imagine it's a lot trickier in some of these areas.
Yeah. So Nimitz is out in Kalaeloa, and there is confusion. So Kaimana Beach, Rocky was actually the first known monk seal to give birth there back in 2017. So back then it was this big deal, and everybody was so worried because Kaimana, it's a very popular beach, a lot of people there, and also they've got a hotel and they've got visitors. So they made a big deal of it at the time, and everybody came over and they cordoned off the area. And that's become routine now because Haiti has given birth there several times now. And so I think they have all the agencies that coordinate and they know what to do. But Nimitz Beach, it seems a little more isolated. There's confusion. It seems that DLNR says it now belongs to the city and county of Honolulu. And so that if you do see drinking or littering, that you call the police. That's what they said. They also said all federal Marine Mammal Act violations are under the jurisdiction of NOAA. So to call NOAA about that. But NOAA says to call DLNR if you see off-leash dogs. So I think the volunteers are really frustrated, and they just don't feel like there's some response. They're doing the best. It's actually a bunch of community grassroots volunteers that are doing this because they care about Rocky and they care about monk seals. And so there were even some that volunteered overnight because that was when a lot of the activity, the most concerning activity was happening, was after dark. So they actually recruited, some volunteers recruited themselves and volunteers stepped forward and are now watching over pup. And for instance, 4th of July weekend, I am just hearing now, was really rough.
Well, I can imagine with people out there, you know, barbecuing and you know, drinking probably in some cases. But, you know, you just want to minimize the user conflict, right? I mean, at Kaimana, they pretty much have people trained now. You know, we know the drill and we know what to do. We know to stay away when there's a pup there on the beach. Go find someplace else to hang out and lay out on the sand. But the West Side is probably not used to having a pup out there. But there have been plenty of stories that you've done about the problems, right? The federal case that they...
Everybody saw the viral video of the man who from Washington who allegedly threw the rock at the monk seal's head. That one really got a lot of attention nationally. You know, it actually resulted in an arrest and a hearing in U.S. District Court. And so that got a lot of attention. And so I think a lot of people are also saying, well, what's going on? Why isn't this getting attention? I understand from just this morning, I heard that there were some illegal fireworks set off by Rocky and her pup. And that's pretty traumatic. I mean, you know, even for domestic animals, as you know, a lot of dogs, a lot of cats can just get frightened and run off.
And the residents here, you know, should know better, right? We've had lots of cases where we've had monk seal deaths due to toxoplasmosis. The last story, I think, was, you know, the necropsy found that the seal had also had a bullet lodged and from a previous incident. And so that's a little distressing. And so you want whoever is accountable for harassing or hurting and harming these monk seals that they be held accountable.
To be held accountable, yes. There have been instances, and I don't believe many of them have actually resulted in consequences, as is the case with the man who threw the rock at the monk seal. But we had a couple years ago some off-leash dogs actually did attack and kill a newborn monk seal pup up on the North Shore, and NOAA did actually find them eventually. There's a lot more to the story, but it is very concerning for sure. I think the volunteers are really worried of whether Rocky and her pup are going to make it to weaning. We have maybe another 2 weeks to go. You know, they nurse generally for about 5 to 7 weeks before mom weans. So there's a couple more weeks to go. I think they're like, whew, they've survived 4th of July. I mean, fireworks, very distressing, I could only imagine, for endangered wildlife. So they're just hoping that hopefully she can make it through this. But Rocky is, she's something else. She's 26 years old. Mm. This is her 16th pup. She was born herself on Kauai. So most of the time, the monk seals go back to their birthplace to give birth. And Rocky is just constantly surprising everybody.
Yeah, I just love your story. She's befuddling everybody. But this is certainly something to watch. And we appreciate you tracking all this for us.
Yes, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Nina.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Star Advertiser's Nina Wu. Look for her story at staradvertiser.com.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
On this week's On the Media, a small town whodunit filled with divorce, corruption, and backstabbing. The mystery? Who is behind the brazen attack on a local newspaper?
Okay, I understand you're not people who are involved in this. Albert, you are in big, deep right.
That's okay.
You understand.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Beginning this evening at 7, following The Daily.
Support for HPR comes from Zippy's, celebrating 60 years of serving Hawaii and supporting local businesses, including collaborations spotlighting local creators. Upcoming collabs at shop.zippys.com.
We'd like to share some feedback that we received from you about recent segments. We heard from several of you about our series on the opening of the Obama Presidential Center in Chicago. Junior writes on Facebook, "No matter your politics, this is a proud moment for Hawaii. President Barack Obama's story began right here in the islands, and it's fitting that his Hawaii roots are being remembered as the Obama Presidential Center opens its doors. Hawaii helped shape his values, worldview, and sense of community, and those influences continue to be part of his legacy. Congratulations on this historic milestone, and mahalo for keeping Hawaii's place in that story alive." Yes, sir. And you also shared your memories and reflections about the closing of Ward Center, which shut down its doors at the end of this month. Ellen writes, 40-some years ago, I worked at Ward Warehouse and then at a publishing company on Halekuila Street. The changes in Kaka'aka were more dramatic than anywhere else in Honolulu, I thought, when I came back recently to visit friends. Eric says, I love Ward Warehouse. Worked there for a Rotelcom, a telecom company in the 80s. Ward Warehouse was an interesting project that deserved a better fate. And Ula says, sad to see this go, one of those places that still had charm. Where is Nemea, Hawaii going to be now? But not all were so sad to see the center go. Homer writes, it was empty for years. The parking garage was too low and a nightmare. Monica writes, it definitely brought me back to my childhood. Used to go to Pearl Ridge and Ala Moana locations often with my family. So miss Shirokia. Another user says, Shirokia, the original Sanrio store. I saved my money to buy a pencil or eraser or sticker. Love that part of the store because it made me happy and something to look forward to going and spending my money. And Zoltan writes, it was a much more colorful world then, and I miss it. We do appreciate all the feedback. If you have a question or comment about a story, write to us at hawaiipublicradio.org. You can also leave a voicemail on our talkback line. Off the July 4th holiday, we thought we would check in with shoppers, but instead of asking what's in your cart, we wondered what's not in your cart. What's just too expensive that you're choosing not to buy? And here's why. I was going through the ice cream freezer of a neighborhood store last month, acai sorbet, half gallon, on sale for $31. Yep. You heard right, regularly priced at $34. What a deal. I took a triple take, and that acai sorbet stayed on the shelf. HBR's Kevin Allen went around town asking shoppers what they were missing from their baskets. Here's what we heard from Tim, Katie, and Kathleen going into the holiday weekend.
I just came from the grocery store, and I literally bought two bags of beef jerky, which each bag cost like $10 for... It's really good beef jerky, but very manini, and a pack of ice cream for like $10. So like for as small as I got, it's $30. And as a young 20-something-year-old, you know, trying to make their way in this economy, it's very hard. It's very tough. I'm lucky that I have a good support network with my family to help me get on my feet until I can get to the point where I can be truly independent. But if it wasn't for that, I definitely would be struggling right now.
Oh yeah. I was just at Safeway and I was shocked by, you know, the price of produce and meat, like you were saying. So we were just talking about what to grill. It's probably going to be chicken. Normally we would do like a surf and turf shrimp and steak, but yeah, things are a bit different this year.
Absolutely. Like across the board, like cooking is my happy place. Like if I'm not at work, I want to be home, like making a huge family meal that we all get to come together and celebrate. And that menu has definitely changed over the last couple of years. And it's sad, but we find new ways to do it. You know, it doesn't have to all be about the big menu, but it definitely, I think gathering and those human connections, that human interaction often revolves around food. And when that becomes a stress in your life, it's kind of, it affects it. It affects how you're celebrating. But it's about family.
Is there a specific, I guess, items that you just can't buy anymore?
Beef is really, really hard. That has to be a super special occasion. We're down to like Costco burgers are like our go-to beef, and then, you know, looking for pork products and even like chicken thighs, which used to be a much more affordable meat, is more expensive than the chicken breasts, which I'm not quite sure why right now. But yeah, it's the meats. It's hard to do.
But we've also learned that some items aren't in your cart because they aren't on the shelf to begin with. We stopped by India Market. It's been at the South Baratania Street location for about 25 years. And owner Shireen Khan told us he was planning on staying open all weekend. As a small family business, he just couldn't afford to close for the holiday. Between the tariffs and the supply chain issues, though, some of his customers' favorite items just aren't in stock. Here's how he's maintaining the 10% updated tariff rate imposed by the Trump administration.
Yeah, it was 18-20%, and... We've had stock of items prior to that, and we had kind of prepared that we knew some drastic things were coming. But then again, during this process, I mean, it's a nightmare. Things are not coming here on time. We try to get things here, order 10 cases. They only send us one cases. a lot of products, a lot of frozen products are basically are held back due to FDA requirements, due to government regulations. But apparently we are here, we're still surviving. Most of our product comes from Europe, not much in the Asia Pacific, but a lot of them from Europe, you know, towards India, Pakistan, I would say, London, you know, all over the place. So,
well, you also have product that you said comes from the Middle East, and so the tensions there have impacted what you get.
It's drastically, yes. There's a very high quality products that come out of Lebanon, Turkey, Syria, and places like that. So a lot of these places are, you know, under with this war thing, and factories are closed, and items are not coming out on time. One of the items that that really has been affecting us is Turkish Delights. I mean, as you know what it is. And those things, and a whole bunch of olives, you name it, Mediterranean and Middle Eastern items, tahinis, all these items are very scarce. But it's coming slowly. We'll see how that progresses through. So. Yeah.
And so how is it you just as, you know, a Hawaii resident, when you go to the store, is there anything that's not in your cart because you see that the price has gone up so much?
Before, we used to be more friendly, more kind in buying more stuff. Whereas if I would go to the store, you know, something is there, we will buy like two or three of them. But whereas now, since the prices and have gone up drastically, we look for just buying one versus three. And, you know, everything comes down to where financial budget and all those. If you don't make a profit, then how would you spend, you know?
Yeah, you have to cut corners somewhere if it's getting less in the shopping cart for your own family.
True, yes. And, you know, those are the things that are drastically affecting not only us, I think everybody. We as a business owners, we could see. We used to have people come in and for one thing, and they would buy a whole bunch of stuff. But now they even come up to me and say, hey, you know what, Shireen? I'm sorry, we just come in for one thing and we'll just get one thing.
Yeah, you just can't afford it.
No, they can't afford it. And it just, it's nothing we can do. It's beyond our control. You know, we live in an island where, you know, we are in the middle of the ocean, supported by Matson, which is monopoly. They only have, they're the only ones that bring in items. You just have to pay what they ask for. There's not no if and no's.
Yeah. Anything else you would like to share with our listeners just about what it's like trying to keep it together and pay for the tariffs?
You know, just hang in there. I think let's see how things come as year goes down, and hopefully, you know, everybody's been praying that something good will come out, and let's see, and hang in there. I ask all my customers, hey, hang in there, just this time to fasten your seatbelt, and you know, God knows we will succeed. We will be okay, I think, down the road.
Yeah, but whether it's Turkish Delight from Turkey or items from Russia, it's just
Yes. Russians have their products, and a lot of their products are not coming out. Example, buckwheats. They used to be. It's one of their own high quality products, and it wasn't coming for a long time. And slowly now it's coming. Soy, they were famous for that, and they have their own products coming very slow, but slowly it's coming, and hopefully, you know, the war fades away, and then more items will come. But things are beyond our control. There's nothing we can do.
Is there any particular item that you just do not carry anymore?
There are a lot of meat products and frozen items that it has drastically gone up from $9 to like $18 a piece. So we had to cut back on a lot of these products, frozen items, entrees, and things of those that we had to cut back.
Just trying to do your best.
Yes. That is the thing. That I've said before, this is the time to fasten your seatbelt, and hopefully, you know, we make it through.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Catherine. Yeah. Nice talking to you.
That was Shireen Khan of India Market in Mo'ele'ele. The longtime specialty shop stayed open over the holiday weekend. Before we go, we do have the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier, we dove into the history books and learned about the very first celebration of July 4th in the islands. It was during the days of Kamehameha the Great when brothers John and Nathan Winship fired national salutes from their respective vessels in Honolulu Harbor. In the afternoon, the American foreigners were invited to a feast at the Royal Palace. It is said that a crowd of 10,000 gathered to watch the celebrations. The 4th of July would not become an official holiday in Hawaii until 1895. But we asked you to tell us what year this first celebration of American independence took place in the islands. If you said 212 years ago or 1814, you would be right. But we stumped you on that one, and we have no winners. But that's our quiz for today. If you have one, send it to TalkBack at hawaiipublicradio.org. Well, we're out of time, so that does it for us today. Tomorrow, we plan to hear from the new University of Hawaii Manoa Chancellor. Vasilis Sirmos is a familiar face. He will join us wearing the new hat. Got questions for him? Call our TalkBack line, 808-792-8217, and ask away. You can find the conversation as a podcast. Head to our website or search for it on Spotify or Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. We will be back tomorrow with more of the conversation.